Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 32. I'm Rob Wright, editor of Cert Security, and I'm here as usual with my site editor, Peter Loschen. Peter.
Hi, Rob.
Welcome. Welcome to Chernobyl.
Always happy to be here.
I mean, you may not be happy to be here today. I'm a little under the weather, a little achy,
You may not be happy to be here, but I'm still as happy as always.
Well, you know, I don't think I'll become physically sick as long as I don't get angry. So what are we talking about today?
All right. Well, we're talking about Yahoo.
Again.
Yes. Record setting.
Yes.
It's unprecedented.
So this is, I guess it's not unbelievable, but it's, and we'll get into this in a little bit, but it's hard to imagine how this could be worse for Yahoo, because the company disclosed last week that a second data breach, major data breach, exposing more than 1 billion accounts, has been discovered. And this is in addition to the 2014 breach that the company has been investigating, that they believe exposed at least 500 million accounts. I'm sure there's some account overlap. It's likely that there's some account overlap with these two batches. The 1 billion accounts, one plus billion, I guess, is out in the wild. Yahoo has put out a statement sort of detailing what they've found. It's not good. It's actually pretty bad. So I guess we'll just run down the facts here real quick. So the new data breach, it seems that the second data breach, the bigger data breach, took place in 2013, according to the company, and it seems like they did not know about it until they started looking into the original 2014 data breach.
Which we only heard about in September of this year. So
Yes, we only heard about September of this year because someone told Yahoo. Someone else found the data, you know, I guess there was a sort of threat intel about, you know, people saying online, or a threat actor saying online and on a dark web forum or hacker site, that I've got this data and I'm, you know, look at me. And now you have a situation where there's an even bigger data breach that the company has uncovered. And I guess when I heard about this, I likened it to, you know, you're doing work on your home and you got a leak and you rip open a wall and you find even more worse stuff going on behind the scenes than you thought. Mold, flooding.
Carpenter ants.
Yeah, termites, things like that. Gross stuff, structural integrity issues, which you never want to run into. Can you tell I'm going through some home improvement right now? Luckily, I haven't had to deal with any of those things. But yeah, so I'll just take a look at the statement from Yahoo about this latest breach. It's from Bob Lord, the CISO at the company, who we just want to state for the record, he was not the CISO in 2013. He was not the CISO in 2013. He was not the CISO in 2014. That was Alex Stamos, who's now at Facebook. So basically, the Yahoo was looking at the previously disclosed data breach. They were analyzing data with the assistance of, quote, outside forensic experts, and found that it appears to be Yahoo user data. And based on further analysis of this data by the forensic experts, we believe an unauthorized third party in August of 2013 stole data associated with more than 1 billion user accounts. We have not been able to identify the intrusion associated with this theft. We believe this incident is likely distinct from the incident we disclosed in September 22nd, 2016, end quote. So two different breaches, likely two different threat actors. It seems like the only reason they know this is because the data is out there. I mean, they're saying they've not been able to identify the intrusion associated with the theft. All they have is the data being in the wild. That's concerning, Peter. That says to me that they don't even have a clue as to how, or they may have a clue, but they can't say definitively how this attacker got in. So nation state, run of the mill cyber criminal,
SQLI.
Yep, could be an insider threat. I mean, one of the things we talked about, sort of leading up to this discussion, was this isn't obviously the consumer data you can do certain things with, but it feels like, I don't know, maybe something bigger is going on here. They're maybe looking to target specific individuals, high-profile individuals, government individuals that may have Yahoo accounts, that may have pulled a John Brennan, forwarded documents or chained email accounts together with a Yahoo account. That's not good. That's not good. And I'll tell you what's worse, and this really blew my mind. I'll read you the next part. I'll read you the next part here from the Yahoo statement that came out last week. Quote, for potentially affected accounts, the stolen user account information may have included names, email addresses, telephone numbers, dates of birth, hashed passwords, in parentheses, using MD5, and in some cases, encrypted or unencrypted security questions and answers. The investigation indicates that the stolen information did not include passwords in clear text. Well, that's a relief.
I mean, they were hashed with MD5, so it's not quite plain text.
Yes. I want you to explain that in just a second. So, did not include passwords in clear text, payment card data, or bank account information. Payment card data and bank account information are not stored in the system the company believes was affected. Believes. It's just a caveat. There's no evidence that payment data might have been affected in either breach. But this, number one, this seems similar to the previous breach of 500 million plus accounts. Same type of data involved. But this one, Peter, as you pointed out, MD5, not Bcrypt. Tell us about MD5.
Okay, MD5 back in the day was state of the art. I mean, message
back in what day? Back when you were in college?
No.
It was later.
No, it was after I was out of college.
Okay.
Because most stuff that we talk about happened after that. But
yes.
But the, you know, okay, back in 92, 94, 96, people were still doing MD5. That was, you know, in the 90s, that was one of the authentication hashes that people used.
Yep.
It was, you know, it was fast. It seemed to be secure enough. But by the end of the 90s, people were saying, this is not going to stand. This is not going to stand up to modern day computers. Forget about quantum. We're talking about, you know, the standard 18-month doubling of computing power. By the late 90s, people were saying, MD5, no good. You gotta, if you want to maintain security over the years, you're going to have to switch over to something else because it's just the nature of the way,
you always got to be upgrading to the next algorithm, the more sophisticated or stronger.
You want to make sure that you keep upgrading to the next thing, but you got to make sure that you pick the right next thing, because if you pick the wrong next thing, it could be that somebody's going to announce that they just discovered a way to factor huge primes.
And
huge,
yeah, and Lord knows we've covered that extensively on Search Security, and I think we may have discussed it in a previous podcast about how, you know, there's certain types of encryption that were once thought to be pretty top notch, but now you can sort of, not with relative ease, it takes some doing, but
right. But there's, you know, there's different little tricks that people have come up with over the years that have made it really, really trivial,
yeah,
to break through an MD5 hash, especially if there's no, I mean, I don't even know if they do salting with MD5 hashes. They must, but it's probably not even effective.
Yeah.
Because if it was effective, they would say you can use MD5 as long as you do a secure salt. But they're not saying that. So yeah. I'm interpreting that to mean MD5 is kind of like SSL 1.0 or, you name it. Whatever we were using 20 years ago that's no longer in use because it's been found to be really, really vulnerable to getting cracked.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's not a good look for Yahoo.
It's certainly worse. It certainly puts this one in a worse light than the 2014 breach, because at least that one, you know, obviously, and we discussed this at length in our earlier podcast, but certainly having, you know, unencrypted security questions, that puts users at risk. I mean, the personal data being at risk, I mean, being exposed and not protected in any way, that's bad. But having the security questions, I mean, if you wanted to get into someone's Yahoo account, I don't know what they're doing now. I mean, I don't want to say I don't know what they're doing now. There's a section of the data breach notification that Yahoo says, we are notifying potentially affected users and have taken steps to secure their accounts, including requiring users to change their passwords. We also invalidated unencrypted security questions and answers so that they cannot be used to access the account. Great, great. But they only just learned about it leading up to this, and the data's been out there for a while. You know, an attacker could have used those security questions and said, you know, I forgot my password. I don't know why the recovery email system isn't working. Can you help me out? Here's my date of birth. Here's my personal information, my address. And here's the security question. What is a person on the other end of that call going to do? Have they been trained to say, nope, it's password, it's my way or the highway? Or are they going to say, oh, I, you know, I'll give you a break. I hear the baby crying in the background.
Right, we just saw that last week.
We did.
Saw the video of the woman who put the audio of a baby crying, who actually, without anything other than the crying baby audio, managed to get an email password reset and resent.
Yeah,
and that was not from that was from an organization I think that should have known better.
Yeah, it wasn't Yahoo, but
yes,
it should have been more.
Right.
It should have been more careful. And to be clear, I mean, I know we've sort of beat up on John Brennan, the sitting director of the CIA, for getting hacked and using his AOL account to forward docs on. But I mean, that's a social engineering attack the attackers went directly to I think Verizon.
Right.
Verizon.
That sounds
absurd. And to gain control of the accounts and get, and I mean, if your customer service reps are not, or tech support reps are not equipped to deal with these sort of things and are not on the lookout, you know, I mean, prior to, you know, these recent weeks, Yahoo didn't know this data was in the wild. So there may have been, I mean, that would be fascinating if Yahoo had data that said, an unusual number of people seeking to reset their passwords or change their passwords, not knowing their passwords, but knowing the security questions. That would be fascinating.
Well, you know, the whole security question thing, I think that's going to be going away real soon, because over the weekend I was doing a little proactive hygiene, security hygiene, and I was going through my Google account, and apparently I had a security question on Google, but when they showed me my security posture, they said, this has been deprecated.
Mm.
Do you want to delete it? And of course I do. But the fact is, it's been a really long time since I've given it what would be an accurate response to a security question. I treat those as like a backup password.
Right.
So
right.
The answer to most of my security questions are strong passwords.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mostly. Because I'm not going to remember, you know, what was my favorite pet when I was a kid? Well, sometimes it was one of them, and sometimes it was another
one. Your first pet, Peter. Your first pet. Better hope that there are no pictures of your first pet on Facebook and that your profile is in public.
My first pet, we had that before cameras were invented. So it would be a painting or a drawing, but
cave art.
Not quite a cave painting. We didn't have any of those.
Yeah.
But that's one of the things that this whole security hygiene, security protocols, security processes all need to be updated over time.
Yeah.
Like passwords, we're working on some content these days about multi-factor authentication.
Yeah, absolutely.
FIDO. You know, some of these things we're trying, you know, like, it's very clear that
right.
passwords are not an ideal solution.
Yeah, no, they're not.
And I don't know what the ideal solution is yet. I don't know if we found it yet, but we're going to continue to work on them. But the fact is that if a company like Yahoo is not able to keep this stuff under control and keep up to date with it, then that's troubling, because
they're
a relatively mature company. They're not a startup.
Right.
Startups are really, you know, they're doing hand to mouth. They're trying to stretch the money. They're not spending $250 million over the last 4 years on security.
But at the same time, they're allegedly.
Oh,
reportedly.
Reportedly, right.
I mean, at the same time, a smaller organization might be more nimble and might know that something like this could put them, using MD5 could put them in the ground for good.
Yeah.
So, and just, you know, going back to the MD5 point in our story on the latest data breach at Yahoo, senior reporter at Search Security, Michael Heller, talked to a few folks in the security field to kind of get a sense of how bad is this that they were using it. MD5, I guess it was found to be insecure around 2009. So it's been a while.
Oh, well, actually, I was looking it up last week when we were talking about it first. Bruce Schneier's Applied Cryptography.
That's right.
Published in 96, I want to say.
Yep.
He has a section on MD5, and the last sentence is, I'm going to paraphrase.
Bruce won't mind.
Okay. The last sentence was, stay away from MD5.
Good enough.
Because it's, you know.
And that was when I was in college.
You were in college in 96.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Good times.
Yeah, they were.
Sure.
They were good times.
So.
But yes, that, you know, so when I say early, you know, late 90s, people were starting to say, but yeah, by 08, 09, there were, you know, people in organizations were coming out and saying, time to get rid of MD5.
Yeah.
Whereas 10 years before, they were saying, it's probably time to start looking for alternatives.
Right, right. And to Yahoo's credit, they did start to move that way. They should never have been using it in 2013. In fact, Brian Krebs, the InfoSec reporter, did an interesting sort of Q&A or FAQ, I guess, with about the breach. And he basically said, anyone with half a clue in securing passwords already knew long ago that storing passwords in MD5 format was no longer acceptable and an altogether brain dead idea, end quote. And I'll just say that, you know, in Mike's story about the breach, he talked with Eldon Spricherhoff, founder and chief security strategist at eSentire. And here's the quote. In the Yahoo case, account passwords were hashed. Think of it as a one-way encryption that can't be decrypted. But if you take every possible alphanumeric and punctuation combination, mix it with every possible seed and feed it through the hash function, you end up with all possible hashed passwords. You can then do a reverse lookup and find the actual password. What this means is that with standard password technology in place, hackers can easily identify user passwords. And that puts it sort of in crystal clear terms right there, just how bad this was. And again, for the record, neither Alex Stamos nor Bob Lord were at the company at this time. In fact, Yahoo, we should note, began moving away from MD5, I guess, in late 2013, according to reports. In 2014, or late 2013, they began moving away from it. In 2014, when Alex Stamos joined, I think in March, they were moving towards bcrypt. And that the data that was breached in 2014 was protected with bcrypt. I think that's probably how they know that two different batches of data, maybe some overlap, we're not totally sure. But Peter, before we wrap up here, just kind of note a developing portion of this story. We learned just recently via New York Times story that apparently a security company, InfoArmor, knew about this data breach, like knew that it happened, knew that this data was in the wild, you know, I guess a couple months ago, and knew it was being sold for, what did they say, $300,000?
That's correct.
I mean, it's sort of depressing that our data is that cheap, but I'm guessing they're probably looking at this, you know, a lot of the consumer data and saying, this is disposable. They're probably dummy accounts, dead accounts, people don't even use them anymore, or maybe they have 2FA. They're probably going after looking for specific individuals. That's just my guess. But InfoArmor, according to the story and from additional reports, did not notify Yahoo when they came across this data. That's a little unusual.
Yeah, you know, that's, I've been in and out of this whole business of covering this type of news over the years, and I'm getting used to the, you know, the current version of how we do go about everything here. Not telling the company whose data it is that you found their data being sold on the darknet or whatever the case might have been seems to be a totally against all the rules of coordinated or responsible disclosure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they, you know, a lot of people say a lot of things, but do we have to believe them?
Yeah.
And, you know, some of this stuff will sort of filter out as being true or untrue or maybe true. But if you know about a company who's been breached for 1 billion passwords and you don't tell them,
I would be enraged. Like, if the breach was like our company, if it was TechTarget, and I find out that they knew this months ago, I would be pretty ticked off.
Yes.
I'm already ticked off. I'm not feeling well. I'm cranky. Got body aches, but I would be pretty upset. And it's interesting. In the Times story, they talk with InfoArmor. They speak with Andrew Komarov, Chief Intelligence Officer at InfoArmor. And, you know, again, this is according to the New York Times story. Mr. Komarov said in an interview on Thursday that his company obtained a copy of the database and over the last few months alerted military and law enforcement authorities in the U.S., Australia, Canada, Britain, and the European Union about the breach. InfoArmor did not go to Yahoo directly, Mr. Komarov said, because the internet giant was dismissive of the security firm when approached by an intermediary. That seems
That's strange.
Get stranger.
Here's
another sentence. He also said he did not trust Yahoo to thoroughly investigate the breach since it could threaten the sale to Verizon. There's a potential for it to be swept under the rug. Although in Yahoo's defense, it does not seem like they swept the 2014 breach, the original breach, under the rug. And they tried to at least investigate it, stay on top of it. But if you, the sale is pending and you don't think they're going to investigate it because it might disrupt the acquisition, but you still tell them, you still, an intermediary? What, I mean, I don't, like, no, you go to them directly, you say, I don't care how much this affects your acquisition, your users' data is in the wild. If we're going to be real about InfoSec, I feel like, unless there are extenuating circumstances that I'm not aware of here, I feel like that's the standard operating procedure. You go to them directly and you tell them, this happened, we've informed law enforcement already, and you should tell your users. And if you don't, I mean, I know this isn't the same as a software vulnerability or a bug that you tell a vendor about, but I almost wonder if we should get to the point where something like this, because Yahoo users deserve to know. They do.
Yep.
And if you come across something like this, what's the right tactic? What's the right approach? I feel like the right approach is to say, here it is, we're telling you directly, we know that you got an acquisition going on and you probably don't want to talk about this, but here it is, you should inform them. And if you don't, it's going to make its way into the press. Or we're going to publicly disclose it because users have a right to know that you were using MD5 inexcusably. So, is that too harsh?
Well, no.
Good for InfoArmor for finding it, but.
Well, they claim to have found it, but, and so far we have to take their word for it, right?
They probably do. I mean, they're a good company. They're strong. They're reputable. No reason to believe that they didn't. But we don't know how.
Yeah.
We don't know how they found it.
Well,
exactly.
So the whole thing. We come back to this all the time. For me, I think if you're transparent, that's going to solve a lot of these issues. Yeah. If you're not transparent, that makes it look bad.
Yeah, agreed.
If you come out and say, hey, this happened, we're aware of it, we know that it messes up, you know, potentially it could impact or it could affect our merger, but we have to tell what we know and we have to be open about it. That covers over a lot of faults. Whenever somebody, because this always happens, the companies that try to stonewall or try to, you know, push off or, you know, not give full details, they're the ones that we constantly flay.
Yeah, and that's true.
The ones that are upfront about this stuff, we praise them. So yeah. I don't know. I think it's important for companies to be transparent about these things.
There should be a discussion, not just here in Chernobyl in our podcast studio, but about when you come across something like this, what is your responsibility under the sort of generally accepted procedures of security disclosure? If you find data sets like this, huge troves of exposed user data, you know, do you give the company the standard 90 days to go public or 60 days or whatever? And I'll just note before closing out, because I'm running on empty here. In the New York Times story, they point out that they got a comment from Yahoo basically saying, on Thursday last week, they could not verify Mr. Komarov's claims, which were made public in the Bloomberg News article last week. And this is the company statement, quote, "The limited InfoArmor data set provided to us by Bloomberg based on initial analysis could be associated with the data file provided to us by law enforcement. That said, if InfoArmor has a report or more information, Yahoo would want to assess that before further comment." So the limited InfoArmor data set provided to us by Bloomberg, not InfoArmor. So they got it from the news agency, a news outlet. I mean, that's a lot of questions here. And that's why we're here in the podcast studio talking about it, but certainly a larger discussion about the policies and procedures of disclosing breaches, not just vulnerabilities, and when users deserve the right to know and how this should be handled, you know, both discreetly and with transparency, like you said, Peter. You're always here to sort of balance, and I appreciate that, Peter.
I'm happy to do it.
We didn't get too crazy on this one. That's probably good because we're out of time. Peter, thank you so much for discussing the latest head-scratching enterprise failing, security failing, data breach, risk and repeat, at it again, one after another. Thanks so much for joining me, as usual.
Always, always a delight.
And thanks to you listening to this episode of Risk and Repeat. I'm Rob Wright, and we will see you next time.